Shalom Aleichem, good evening everyone. Thank you again for joining me. Let's continue in our second part of discussing the transmission of the Torah, the Shalshalas HaKabbalah, and showing how the Torah has progressed. Again, feel free to interrupt with questions at any time. Nothing is off the table, as long as it's somewhat relevant to what's going on in the Shir. We left off last time with the Torah Shebaal Peh and the Torah in the possession of Eli HaKohen, who is the end of the period of the Nevi'im, and how Pinchas had overseen the transmission of the Torah during this period. And we are left now with the beginning, the period of the Malachim, the period of the kings. Shmuel HaNavi is the Talmud of Eli HaKohen. That is clear from just learning Navi, and the Rambam points this out in his Hakdamah to the Adach HaZaka. The Gemara in Brachos Lamed Aleph says that Shmuel was Mora Halacha. He taught Halacha in front of Eli, and Tosus explains that Eli was the Gadol Hador. Eli was the leading Halachic decider of the generation. Shmuel came to learn from him. At that time, he had clarified, based on Sukkim, meaning young Shmuel, before he was a Navi, that a Zar, a non-Kohen, was kosher, was allowed to Shecht a Korban. And that was considered novel usage of Torah Shebaal Peh. And the Gemara in Tainus and Daf Chav Zayin says that Shmuel was Mesakein. He established the 16 Mishmaras. He took the 8 groupings of the Kohanim of Moshe Rabbeinu and he doubled it into 16. Most famously, I think we all know this, is that the Basin of Shmuel established the Halacha based on Psukim that Amonis Umoavis, a female from Amon Moav, could be joined B'Kal Hashem, could marry into the Jewish people. That is the premise of all of Megillas Rus. The Rambam in Hilchos Isurabia says this is in fact maybe Halacha Moshe Mesinai, but nevertheless, we'll assume, as the Gemara does seemingly, that this is based on using the Yud Gimel Midos, the 13 principles that we discussed in the past. Another Gadol at this time, just to note, was Yishai. The Yerushalmi in Yevamos Pereches says that Yishai was one of the great Gedolim of this generation as well. Now, since we are discussing the period of the Nevi'im, we need to make just a slight to disembark for a moment from our journey, just to discuss exactly the role of Nevuah and the Shalshalas HaKabbalah. The Rambam in his Hakadamah, in his introduction to the Perash Mishnayos, has a very, very lengthy point where he digresses and discusses the role of Nevuah. And in the Shalshalas HaKabbalah, the Rambam says, Nevuah and supernatural abilities of understanding are totally meaningless when it comes to explaining, teaching, and receiving the Torah. Shmuel and those who followed that were Nevi'im were there as Chachamim. Every single Navi we're going to discuss in the next few moments, it is not important that they had Nevuah, except when it gets to the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah. But as Nevi'im, we don't care. They are on this list because they are Gedol Yisrael and great transmitters of the Torah and great Talmidei Chacham. This touches upon the issue of Lo Bashamayim, the Torah is not in heaven, as famously discussed in the Gemara in Bava Metzia Nun Tes, the famous episode of Rabbi Yehoshua, and the oven, and how do we paskin. Now, why is it important for the Mesorah, for the transmission of Torah, to discuss the idea that a Navi has no involvement? Well, the first would be because if Nevuah could be part, or supernatural abilities could be part of Torah Shebaal Peh, the whole Torah could be ruined by charlatans, by people who were fakers. Rav Yaakov Weinberg, Rosh Yiv Neri Yisrael, explained that if your power is in prophecy, you can twist the Torah however you want, and you can ruin it, and the Torah can be turned into Swiss cheese. Another reason may be that the infinite wisdom of the Torah is contained within the Torah itself. We should never think that we need anything outside of the Torah to understand the Torah. For example, all future cases, like electricity, whatever it may be, can be mined from the Torah. You don't need supernatural understanding to learn the Torah. The Torah itself contains all of the tools and all the infinite wisdom it needs in order to transmit it. After Shmuel HaNavi, his Talmud was David HaMelech. That's clear from the Rambam. The Medrash in Shmuel and Perach of Beis says David was a Talmud of Shmuel as well. The Gemara Moed Katzin Tazayin says that David was the Rosh Sanhedrin, the head of the Sanhedrin, as well as being the king. David HaMelech made a number of takanos in his generation as well. The Gemara in Taina says he took the 16 Mishmaros of Shmuel and put it into 24 groups of the Kohanim. The Gemara in Brachos Memches that he mentioned Yerushalayim and benching. The Medrash in Bamidbar Rabbah in Parshas Korach says the concept of saying 100 brachos a day, every single day, in order to stop the Magif, in order to stop the plague, which is certainly Nyana Deyuma, was enacted by David HaMelech as well. And the Gemara in Avodah Zarah and Daf Lamed Vav says that David made the Gzeira that there was an Isser to have Yichud between a man and a single woman. Before David HaMelech came around, the entire Isser was just a man with a married woman. It was David who made the Isser of Yichud with a man and a unmarried woman. This was in response to an episode in Shmuel Beis, in Perek Yud Gimel. He had a son named Amnon and a daughter named Tamar. Now Tamar was born not from a wife of David, but rather from an Ashes Yifas Toar, a woman who was captured in battle. Amnon desired Tamar and eventually managed to be alone with her, and he ended up taking advantage of his stepsister in a very, very inappropriate way. And because of that event of people being inappropriate when alone, David went on to enact the Gzeirah of Yichud between an unmarried person and another individual. The Talmud of David was Achia HaShiloni and his son Shlomo HaMelech. The Rambam cites this based on an ancient book of Medrash called the Sefer HaTagin. The Ravid and the Meiri say that Achia was Mekabel from Shlomo. But whatever it may be, Shlomo, Achia, HaShiloni are all in this Tekufa, and there was a basin of Shlomo HaMelech. What did the basin of Shlomo HaMelech do? Well, you may have heard of some of the things that Shlomo HaMelech did. The Gemara in Erev in Daf Chafalov says that one cannot bring something from a Rishus HaYachid to another Rishus HaYachid without an Erev. This was done to prevent people from carrying in a Rishus HaRavim on Shabbos. That was enacted by Shlomo's Basin. The Gemara in Shabbos Tesvav says the Netilas Sedaim, the washing of hands before eating Kadshim, Karbanos, was enacted by Shlomo HaMelech. The Gemara in Brachos says that we mentioned the Beis HaMikdash in benching based on Shlomo HaMelech. The Gemara in Bava Kamma Pei Aleph says that you may walk in a permitted path that cuts through a private field in the summer where it won't damage the field, even though it's somebody else's private property, based on the Takana of Shlomo. And finally, the Pirkei de Eliezer writes that the entrance to the Beis HaMikdash had, there was two entrances. One for Chasanim, so people could wish him a Mazel Tov, and the other for Avelim, so that people could wish the mourner Hamakim Menachem Eschem. These were both established by Shlomo and his Beis Din. The Talmud of Achia Shiloni was Eliyahu HaNavi, as noted by the Rambam. The Yerushalmi in Erevin on Perek Hei says that Achia Shiloni was his Rebbe, and that learning with him was like learning and standing before the Shechina. That's how great it was to learn from Achia Shiloni. And Eliyahu Navi was his Talmud. The Talmud of Eliyahu was, we all know this, Elisha HaNavi, and this is clear from the Psukim in Chazal. The Talmud of Yehoyada HaKohen was, the Talmud of Elisha was Yehoyada HaKohen, also brought on the Rambam. And the Rambam says that Zechariah ben Yehoyada was the Talmud of Yehoyada HaKohen. His son, Hoshea HaNavi, was the Talmud of Zechariah ben Yehoyada. This is brought in the Seder Olam Rabbah. And the Talmud of Hoshea was Amos. The Talmud of Amos was Yeshaya HaNavi, the famous Yeshaya HaNavi. And the Rambam notes this. And this period was the base of Chizkiyahu HaMelech as well. Chizkiyahu HaMelech and Yeshaya HaNavi lived at the same time. What did Chizkiyahu's Beis Din do? Well, the Gemara in Sanhedrin Yud Beis says that Avodah Zarah makes a person Tameh based on this Gzeirah of this Beis Din. Chizkiyahu, at that point, was in the process of weaning Bnei Yisrael from Avodah Zarah from his predecessors, and therefore he made a very harsh ruling about Avodah Zarah to treat it like Tumah. The Gemara in Adarim and Mako says that Chizkiyahu said you have to take Meiser on vegetables, and the Mata Moshe writes in Siman Reish Chaf that the tefillah of Hashem Elokei Yisrael Shuv Mecharon Apecha that we recite in Tachan on Monday and Thursdays was established by Chizkiyahu HaMelech. The Talmud of Yeshaya HaNavi was Micha HaNavi. The Talmud of Micha was Yoel. Now the period of Yoel HaNavi brings us to the very dark period of Menasheh, the very evil king of Klal Yisrael. It was good politically because he sold himself out to every other kingdom, but religiously it was a very bad period. Yoel was a Talmud. Nachum was a Talmud of Yoel, and Chavakuk was a Talmud of Nachum, all in the period of Menasheh. Menasheh dies. The Talmud of Chavakuk was Tzefanya, I know these are all Nevi'im, we don't learn that often, but I promise you they're there. And the Rambam records all of this in his Hakdama. Tzefanya was a grandson of Chizkiyahu HaMelech. The Talmud of Tzefanya was Yirmiyahu HaMelech, and this begins the period of Chorban Beis HaMikdash, which is certainly appropriate for the time that we are in. The Talmud of Yirmiyahu HaNavi was Baruch Ben Neriah, as we see from the Psukim, and the Rambam points out again in his Hakdama to the Yad HaChazaka. And this brings us to the end of the period of formal Nevuah and the end of Malachim. The Talmud of Baruch ben Neriah was Ezra HaSofer. This is noted by the Rambam. The Gemara in Megillah Tezayin says that Ezra wouldn't leave Galus to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash as long as his Rebbe Baruch ben Neriah was alive. The rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash begins during the lifetime of Ezra. Now, if we're going to talk about Ezra, we need to talk about the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, the most significant event since the giving of the Torah. The Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, which is formed at this period, consists of 120 elders, Chagai, Zechariah, Malachi, Mordechai, Ezra himself, as we'll talk about, Nehemiah. Now, what did they do? What did the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah do? Well, the Gemara in Sukkah Mem Dalet says that it was Chagai, Zechariah, and Malachi who introduced the minhag of hitting the Aravos on the last day of Sukkot. The Gemara in Avodah Zarah Daf Lamed says Daniel made the gzeir of not eating non-Jewish wine and oil. We're not makbid on oil nowadays, but we are makbid on wine. The Gemara in Shabbos Kuchav Gimel says that Nechemya ben Chichliya made the initial gzeir of Muksa, we learned about recently in Daf Yomi. He was also part of that based in. And the Medrash Tanchum in Parshas Vayeshev says that Chagai, Zechariah, Malachi, Zerubbabel, and Yehoshua Kain Gadol made the gzeir against Pas'akab, eating non-Jewish bread. Now, the basin of the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah is often referred to as Ezra u'Beis Dino, Ezra and his basin, by the Rambam, because he was Rosh Basin. Ezra was in charge of the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah. The Gemara in Sanhedrin Chaf Aleph says that Ezra was so great that he would have been worthy to be Mekabel the Torah instead of Moshe Rabbeinu. It's just that Moshe was born first. That's how great Ezra was. The Gemara in Brachos Lamed Gimel says that they established the writing of the Siddur and the creation of Brachos during this period. This group of sages, based in Eretz Yisrael at the end of the first Galus, included many Nevi'im. So their enactments and the Siddur came not just from their wisdom, but it also came from Ruach HaKodesh, Nevuah, and that's why the Siddur is so important and so powerful. They also established Purim, and they wrote the book of Yechezkel, and Trei Asar, and Daniel, and Megillas Esther, and there are a number of places in Shas that discuss other Takanos as well. So I think we've at least just scratch the surface how significant the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah were in their formation and almost transformation of Torah Sheba'al Peh as we have it, all using Yugim Amidos and all of the rules that the Rabbanim are allowed to use. Now, the Rambam in his Hakdama to the Mishnah says that they were different than a regular Sanhedrin because they made many takanos. Usually a Sanhedrin just decides the law. But, you know, we talk about nowadays, is the Supreme Court judicial, or are they making the laws? These are big debates that go on nowadays in our society. Do they change the laws? Well, it's a similar discussion over here. The Sanhedrin used to just make the laws. But in the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, they actually seemingly created laws that affected the use of the Torah going forward, seemingly to prepare Klal Yisrael for the upcoming Galus. Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky and Emes LeYaakov, in his first essay on Pirkei Avos, says that there was an understanding that Bayis Rishon was simply a layover and a preparation for the after effects of Churban Bayis Sheni. Everybody knew that this second Beis HaMikdash was not going to last, and it was really just kind of a way station to kind of, you know, gather everything we could before the long gullus that we're experiencing right now. The Gemara in Bava Kamma Pei Beis lists 10 takanos that were specifically made by Ezra. One can look over there as well. And we can truly appreciate why the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah taught in Pirkei Avos, V'yasu sayag l'Torah. You should make a fence for the Torah. Why did they say this? Because look at what they did. It's something they took very seriously. And now the teaching of the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos makes sense when we understand what they did. Just a comment about this undergoing of transformation and preparing for Galus. I recall hearing a couple of times from Rav Asher Weiss, the name of his father, that his father said that the Judaism and the Torah we have nowadays, the way we practice Judaism, is very different than the Judaism before Anshei Knesset HaGedolah. Now, the pillars that define a frum Jew nowadays are Shabbos and Shul. Do you go to Shul? I mean, when you can. And do you keep Shabbos? These are relatively new things to Klal Yisrael. And the structure for these two pillars was set in place by Ezra and his Beis Din. In the days before Chazal, and this is again what we call the period of Chazal, when we refer to Chazal, we're talking about now, going forward to the end of the Gemara. They lived in an agricultural society. Most of the malachos that you did violated on Shabbos were midoraisa, because you were farming and plowing and things like that. There were very few gezeiros, very few rabbinic laws in place, and it was most likely that people shopped, traveled on Shabbos, because that was the time they had to shop. That was the time they had to do business. In addition, there were no shuls. There was no set tefillah. Yeshivas existed before the first shul. We know from Yehuda. Yehuda went down to Mitzrayim to set up the first yeshiva. There was no kaddish, no kedusha, or a need for a minyan. In fact, the Magen Avraham writes in Simen Kaf Vav that you can be mekayim tefillah min haTorah. You can fulfill davening when you say Moda Ani in the morning. And nobody would ever think to do that nowadays. It's only after the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah did the focus of Avodas Hashem move away from the Beis HaMikdash and move towards Shul and Shabbos. They turned everything upside down. And the way we practice Yiddishkeit is that of the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, and not necessarily the same that went down from Moshe Rabbeinu. Not to say it's not Yiddishkeit. It is. It's the same Torah and it's the same Shmiras HaMitzvos. But to appreciate how the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah prepared us for Galus and set the standards of what Shmiras HaMitzvos would be and what it means to be a frum Jew. And when we talk about going to shul, you know, in Yanei Shabbos and things like that, what we imagine to be the signs of a frum Jew may not have existed in the same form before the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah. Who was the last of the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah? We know that. It's Shimon HaTzadik. That's the second mission in Pirkei Avos. And the Rambam writes as well, this is the end of the Nevuah, finally, 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 and it is at this time that the Greeks conquer Eretz Yisrael. Now, there is what to discuss about the 165 missing years, where seemingly our account of what's going on with Hanukkah does not match up to historians. There is an excellent book that discusses this called Jewish History in Conflict, by Mitchell First. He discusses all the different opinions. Rav Shimon Schwab has a famous essay. So if you're interested to discuss the 165 missing years, go look at that very comprehensive volume. Who is the Talmud of Shimon HaTzadik? Antigonus Ish Socho. You'll notice the Greeks are in town. The name Antigonus is not a usual Jewish name. This is what we see from Pirkei Avos and the Rambam as well. With the passing of Antigonus, we move to the period of the Zugos, the period of the pairs who would lead Klal Yisrael. The leadership switches away from the Kohanim because during the Greek period, the position of the Kohanim had become corrupt. Look at the beautiful volume by Rav Avram Korman called Mavo L'Torah Shebichsavo Shebaal Peh. You can't even read this. I know I'm holding up to the screen, but Rav Avram Korman was a very, very unique Talmid Chacham. He has a beautiful book on this topic. And therefore, the Jewish people appointed a Nasi and an Av Beis Din because they wanted to take the power away from the Kohanim. The Sefer Toldos Yehoshua of the Talmidim of one of the great Talmidim of the period of the Gra has a beautiful parish on Pirkei Avos that we discussed last time. So he writes how the Nasi was the role of Chesed for the Tzibor, and the Av Beis Din, the other one of the Zugos, the other one of the pairs, was the role of Midas Hadin. The Nasi always seems to be more kindly and looking out for the people, and the Av Beis Din is more strict judgment. We'll get to Hillel and Shammai. It's not the point right now, but he actually has a fantastic chiddush where he argues that Hillel's famous personality of being very kind and soft and Shammai's personality of being very rough and firm is not because of the nature of who they were. It was because of the positions they were filling. Hillel needed to be soft as the Nasi, and Shammai needed to be strict as the Av Beis Din. It's a radical approach to how we generally understand the roles of Hillel and Shammai. Okay, so the Talmidim of Antigonus Yishochar, Yossi ben Yoezer, and Yossi ben Yochanan, as we find in Pirkei Avos. The story of Chanukah occurs at this time. In the Netzutzei Or of Reuven Margolios, he suggests that it's for this reason that Yossi ben Yoezer taught, your house should be a place of gathering of Torah. Why? Because the Greeks closed the Beis Medrash. So your home should become a Beis Medrash, because you can't go to the Beis Medrash anymore. The first machlokes in the history of Halach and Klal Yisrael happens in this time. It is a Mishnah in Chagigah in Perek Beis between Yossi ben Yochanan and Yossi ben Yoezer regarding, can you do smicha on a korban? Can you lean? Every korban that's brought has to be leaned upon. That's part of the process of the korban for the owner. Can you do it on Yantif? Are you allowed to handle the animal on Yantif? And that's the first machlokas. Rav Reuven Margolios writes in a different sefer, Yesod HaMishnah V'Arichasa, regarding the foundations of the Mishnah and how it was put together. He says that the first machlokas developed because the Batei Medrash was disrupted by the Greeks and they couldn't clarify the halacha as clearly as before. The Gemara in Shabbos Yedalad says they made at this point the gzeira of Tuma and Eretz Amim, that the land outside of Israel can convey Tuma simply by walking there, and that glass can be Makabal Tuma as well. Their Talmidim were Yoshua ben Parachia and Nitai Ha'arbeli. We see from Pirkei Avos, in this generation, Yochanan ben Matasiyahu, Kohen Gadol Chashmonai, lived, we know from Chanukah. It was during this time that they were misakein the holiday of Chanukah, as we say in davening, and the Gemara in Avodah Zarah Lamed Vav says they also made the gzeder of the Isra Yichud with a non-Jewish woman at this time. Their Talmidim were Yehuda ben Tabai and Shimon ben Shetach. We see this again from the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. The Gemara in Kedushin Samech Vav says that the sister of Shimon ben Shetach was Shalom Tzion Hamalka, who is the wife of Yanai HaMelech. Now you know Shalom Tzion HaMalka because of the street in Yerushalayim in the Mamila section of outside the old city, which, if you'll notice, the street of Shalom Tzion HaMalka runs into which street? Yanai HaMelech. That's on purpose because they were married. Okay? And that's why the streets run together. The latter, meaning Yanai HaMelech, killed many of the Chachmei Yisrael. He had a lot of issues, and Shimon ben Shetach was instrumental in preserving the Torah against his crazy brother-in-law during this extremely difficult period. There's a lot to go on with Shimon ben Shetach. Rav Yitzhak Isaac Halevi in the Doros HaRishonim, a very important work of Jewish history, he has a long discussion where he shows that there already at this point, the Tzedukim and the Perushim, their battle is already being engaged over Torah Shevichsav and Torah Shebaal Peh. And Shimon ben Shetach was involved in a very prolonged battle to wrestle the Sanhedrin back to the Chachamim, away from the Tzedukim. And he slowly expelled Tzeduki members and replaced them with Chachamim and his colleagues and students in order to bring back the power to Chazal. During this time, Choni HaMa'agel lived. The famous story of Choni and the Circle happened at this time. And Shimon ben Shetach made three takanos. The first is the Yerushalmi and Ksubis. And probably one of the most important takanos in the history of Klal Yisrael, and that is that children must go to school. And he set up schools. It used to be, you learn from your parents, you learn from your father. And Shimon ben Shetach saw that that was not sufficient, and he set up formal schools. The Gemara in Ksubas Pei Beis says that at first they would write a ksuba, and they would demand that this amount of money for the ksuba be available in cash on the side. And what would happen? A man would grow old, and he would never marry, because they didn't have that much cash to put away in order to make sure they were able to pay the ksuba in case there was a divorce. Shimon ben Shetach came along and instituted that a man does not have to put all of that cash aside in practice. Rather, all of his property can be guaranteed for the ksuba. And that was the gzeir of Shimon ben Shetach. And finally, the Kolbo writes that the tefillah of Nishmas, which is very complicated, may have been written by Shimon ben Shetach. His name is hinted in a reverse acrostic in the tefillah of Nishmas. You can go check it out yourself. There, Talmidim were Shemaya and Avtalion. As we see from the Mishnah in Avos, the Toldos Yehoshua, there notes that Avtalion saw what was to come in the next generation, as we'll talk about very, very soon, and the impending spread of Machlokas. So what did Avtalion say? He warned his students, Hizaru b'divreichem, shematacho v'chovas galus. You should be careful with your words, because you might go into galus, and people may misconstrue, or there may be machlokas over what you said. This is also the generation of Akavya ben Mahalal. Hordus is in this time. The Talmidim of Shmaya and Avtalion were Hillel and Shammai. And this is the last step that will come to this evening on our ride. We know that they're Talmidim from the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. The Gemara Misachim Samech Vav tells us that before Hillel became the leader, the B'nai B'seira were the Roshi Sanhedrin. The family of B'seira were the heads of the Sanhedrin. However, one Pesach, the B'nai B'seira did not know the halacha as to whether the Korban Pesach pushes aside Shabbos. When Hillel was able to explain the halacha and the Kabbalah of tradition he had from Shammai and Avtalion, the B'nai B'seira stepped down and they gave the Nesias the leadership to Hillel. Now, the above machlokus regarding smicha, leaning on the animal on Yontif, continued until the days of Hillel and Shammai, and concluded, based on a vote between the two, that it was mutter to do smicha on Yontif. The Yushalmi in Chagiga Perek Beis says the only machlokas that existed until this time was this machlokas regarding smicha. In the days of Hillel and Shammai, now I'm being very careful, Hillel. I'm not saying base Hillel and base Shammai. In the days of Hillel and the days of Shammai, between the two men, there were only four machlokas. There was only four disagreements between the two. Besides for the many places where Hillel weighs in on Dine de Rabbanan, or rabbinic laws, there are three specific takanos from Hillel that we need to know. The first, in Gittin Lamed Vav, is Prusbol, the idea that Shemitah can come and it will not uproot a loan and people will get their money back, because people were not lending money in the days of Hillel because they were afraid Shemitah would cancel the loan. And the Gemara in Gittin Ayin Dalet talks about Pidyon of Batei Choma, redeeming houses of walled cities. The halacha is that if a house was sold and it was not redeemed in a walled city by its owners within 12 months, it remains permanently in the possession of the purchaser. At first, what would happen? The purchaser would hide for the last days of the 12th month. He would go into hiding so that the house would be confirmed as his, and the seller, who might want to come get his house back, would never be able to find him. Because the purchaser was hiding, and the seller would never be able to redeem the house from him if he decided to change his mind at the last minute. And that was deemed to be unfair. Hillel made a takana that the seller can deposit the money to buy back the house in the treasury, in the lishka of the Beis HaMikdash. And then what can he do? He can take an axe, and he can break down the door of his house and take it back by force. And when the purchaser wants to, he can go to the Beis HaMikdash and pick up his money for the house that he just essentially had to leave. The third takana, there's what to discuss here as well, but we have a tradition from the Lechem HaPanim. This is cited by the Gilyon Maharsha in Yerodeh and Simon Shin Nun Beis, that the Seder, that the order for how the Chevra Kadisha washes the deceased was established by Hillel. There is such a tradition that it comes from Hillel, who made that process for how we wash the dead. There's a question about this Masorah. You can see the Sefer Alei Hadas, who has a long piece about whether this is a real tradition or not, but there is such an idea that Hillel made up the Seder for washing the deceased. The Gemara in Shabbos Tesvav says that Hillel and Shammai made gzeros regarding Tumah. The Gemara in Shabbos Yud Gimel records 18 gzeros that they made. Chananya ben Chizkiah, who is a Talmud of Hillel and Shammai, wrote Megillas Tainis, which is the first piece of Torah Shebaal Peh ever written down, recording all the days that the Jewish people cannot fast. This generation, there was also Rav Nechunya ben Akana, who wrote the Sefer HaBahir, an important work of Kabbalah. He also wrote the Tefillah of Ana B'Koach, and Nechunya ben Akana wrote, as the Gemara in Brachos tells us in Daf Chav Ches, the Tefillah for entering and leaving the Beis HaMedrash. All of this is going on in the days of Hillel and Shammai. Now, the final piece I want to talk about is machlokas. We need to, again, get off the train for a moment and take a bit of a journey around the issue of machlokas, because this really is where machlokas and halacha comes to the forefront. The Rambam writes in his Hagdama that machlokas in Torah never arises because of confusion over what the previous generation said. The Rambam finds such a premise to be disgusting, to say that Kabbalah and the transmission of Torah was messed up along the way. Halachos that are transmitted are always transmitted accurately. And I hope that we have shown again and again how carefully we take the transmission of Masorah and how carefully it is protected. It is not simply a game of telephone. And when we say that the halacha goes from generation A to generation B, we have seen how seriously we take that. And therefore the Rambam says, there's never an issue in transmission. Questioning the previous generation is always involved. We always ask questions. The multiple chains of Masorah we've spoken about, the oversight we've spoken about, transmission doesn't get messed up. We'll talk about in a moment what does happen now. This brings to mind the story of a monk. A new monk arrived in a monastery, and he's assigned to help the other monks by copying old texts by hand. And he notices, however, that they're copying copies and not the original book. So the new monk goes to the head of the monks in the monastery to ask him about what's going on. So he points out if there was an error in the first copy, then that error would be continued in all the other copies. So the head monk tells the new guy, "We've been copying from the copies for centuries, but you make a good point. So let me go down to the cellar with one of the copies to check against the original." So hours later, nobody has seen the monk. So one of the monks goes downstairs to look for him. He hears sobbing coming from the back of the cellar, and he finds the old monk leaning over one of the original books crying. So he asks, "What's wrong?" "The word is celebrate, not celibate," says the old monk with tears in his eyes. So the idea is that we take it very seriously. We take the transmission not just as a copying of books, but there's so much oversight and protection and Rabbanim looking out and questioning that the Rambam is making a very important point. Transmission of Masorah is almost always accurate. Now, machlokes, says the Rambam, comes from disagreement of how to apply the principles of a halacha as they were handed down from previous generation. For example, we know what actions are prohibited on Shabbos. The issue is how to apply the principles and rules to different situations. That's where there may be machlokas. To echo the earlier Rambam from the Hagdama, there is no machlokas in Kabbalah, what we receive, but when it comes to the third category of Torah Shebaal Peh, using the tools to read between the lines, there can be machlokas in derivation. Machlokas in derivation, but not in transmission. Now, this is important in understanding an additional issue. Isn't it possible that perhaps something was lost in our Gullus? No, Gullus is really hard. And there's a lot of difficulties going on. Inquisitions, Holocausts, persecutions. We already say that with the passing of Moshe, we learned about Asniel ben Kenaz and the forgetting of Halachos. Even Bnei Beseira forgot a Halacha about the Korban Pesach. So the Kesef Mishnah writes, in the Rambam Hilchos Mamrim, in Perek Beis Halacha Alf, it is so crucial to look at this Kesef Mishnah. And he explains that it is true that halachos based on drushos and the 13 principles can be forgotten. However, the Beis Din and Chachamim in every generation have the right to use the Yud Gimel Midos, the 13 principles, the hermeneutic principles in derivation, with their own understanding to derive the halachos in their own fashion. And that is incredibly important Kesef Mishnah. Therefore, there is never a crisis if some of the derived halachos are forgotten, because each dayan in his generation can use Yud Gimel Midos to derive the halachos. And this is what the Gemara Rosh Hashanah Chaf Hei says. Yiftach Bedoro, Kishmuel Bedoro. Yiftach, who is this shofet that nobody remembers, is as important in his generation as Shmuel. You all heard of Shmuel, but nobody remembers Yiftach. But Yiftach has the same right to use the rules of derivation, Yud Gimel Midos, to bring out the halachos, no different than Shmuel. The pasuk says, Uvasa la kohanim alaviim al shofet asheria ben memahem. Right, you'll go to the kohanim alaviim in your days. So the Gemara says, v'chisala al dadcha she'adam holech etzel hadayin shaliyak biyamav. What, I'm going to go to a dayan, a judge who lives in another generation? I'm going to go to a judge from the 1700s. He's dead. I can't go to him. So what does it mean? Asher hiya biyamim mehem in your days, says the Gemara. Hayin l'chalelech ala etzel shofet she'biyamav. You have to go. So the shofet who's in your day, the Rabbanim, the Chazal in that generation, have the right to use legal mamidos, again, the third category of Torah Shebaal Peh, to bring out the halachos as they see fit. And therefore, even if when it comes to derivation, there is a forgetting of something, it can always be brought back in. Things that are Kabbalah, things that are transmitted, are not going to get messed up. Now, the Kesef Mishnah importantly notes that this ended with the mission in the Gemara, because we accepted the rulings of Shas as binding. We can't use the Yud Gimel Midos anymore after the Gemara finished. That's not part of our Torah Shebaal Peh anymore. We can't make those derivations. We'll get back to that later when we get to the conclusion of the Gemara. Now, this can explain why there's a machlokes in the Gemara in Menachos and Daf Mem Aleph. The Gemara Menachos on Daf Mem Aleph has a discussion, how many strings are used for tzitzis? And what about the famous machlokes between Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam regarding the order of parshos and tefillin? Why do they simply ask the people who lived before them what they did? Why are we having machlokes over what your tzitzis look like? Just ask your Zaidi. What's the big question over here? Because these dinim, how many tzitzis strings, the order of the parshios, are not perusha mimikubalim. They are not clearly transmitted explanations of the Torah. They are based on yud gimel midos. They are based on derivation. And therefore, they are subject to disagreement going back many generations. Even the machlokas regarding tefillin exists in the days of Chazal. We know from archaeological discoveries. They had Rashi tefillin, they had Rabbeinu Tam tefillin. Why? Because those could have machlokas over things that are based on Yud Gimel Midos. Now, what does the Gemara mean when it says that there was an increased machlokas in Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel after Hillel and Shammai died? Because they didn't have proper shimush talmid chacham, they didn't serve the rebbeim properly. Because most machlokas is caused when the next generation is not as developed as the previous generation, and therefore they did not have the proper understandings of those halachos, and therefore they had to come to more machlokas. Let's conclude now with the last thing, and that is elu ve'elu divrei Elokim Chayim. Again, apologize for going longer, just because we're only meeting fewer times than the usual six, but we want to get everything in. The Gemara in Erevin Daf Yud Gimel says that Shammai and Hillel each established a large yeshiva, and during the days of Hillel and Shammai, again, there was that limited disputes that they had, and the years went on, there were many disputes amongst their followers. There are over 300 machlokos between Talmidei Beis Shammai and Talmidei Beis Hillel. That is a lot more than four. Generally, Beis Hillel is lenient, except in those cases listed in the Mishnah Adios. And the Gemara concludes that the halacha follows Beis Hillel, because they were the majority. Why were they a majority? Because the majority, they were given the ability to become the majority, because they always taught their opinion along with the opinion of Beis Shammai, and they always taught the opinion of Beis Shammai first. And the Ritva points out, the Reviewer Anasi would follow this example when recording Mishnayos, always bringing the opinion of Beis Shammai first. Now, the Gemara comments regarding all these disputes, famously, Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim Chayim. Both these and these are the word of the living God. Now, what does that mean? What's the practical implication of Elu ve'elu, that both are right? How can Hillel be right and Shammai be right? Why would Hashem want multiple perspectives from the Torah anyway? Why can't we just have one right thing to do and just follow that one thing? What's going on over here? The discussion of Elu ve'elu is a very, very broad and at the same time a very in-depth topic. And I'm only going to scratch the surface, and hopefully you'll go and pursue the rest of the discussion on your own. Before beginning with the classic two understandings of how there can be multiple truths, you need to know a Mishnah in Adios in Perek Aleph. This, we're going to learn the Mishnah according to the Ravid. The Mishnah says clearly that we learn both the correct and the incorrect opinions when we learn halacha, so that we can clarify later on when something is following a refuted approach and not keeping the proper halacha. It's like a built-in security to the Masorah to make sure the accepted Piskei Halachos remain that way. Meaning if you see somebody following this opinion and they say, well, this is what I do, so you'll say, yeah, this is what you do, but we paskin that this opinion is not correct. If you don't include the incorrect opinions in the Masorah, then people will just say, well, this is just what I do. I follow this opinion. So you need to keep those incorrect opinions within the Masorah to know what has been refuted and what was kept. This touches upon a famous drasha that Rabbi Shechter likes to quote, that the siyum of the Gemara and Brachos that Rabbi Salvecha gave when he finished learning Brachos in the Moria Shul in Manhattan. So Rabbi Salvechik noted that we learn Masachas Brachos, and we learn Hillel and Shammai, but we don't paskin like Shammai. So was that a fulfillment of Talmud Torah? And Rabbi Salvechik said, yes, certainly it is. Even when you learn the wrong opinion, it is still under the rubric and the column of Torah 100%. And even if you learn Halacha, and by mistake you come out the wrong way, it's still Talmud Torah, and it's all part of our Masorah, Eilu Ve'eilu Devaril Kimchai. Now, let's conclude. What are the two explanations of how there are multiple truths? The first is Rashi. Rashi in that Gemara holds that there is only one truth at a time, but that the other opinion could be the halacha in a slightly different scenario, meaning every opinion has an opportunity to be correct depending on the situation. For example, maybe in a time of great need, you can use an opinion that's not generally accepted. The Medrash Shmuel in Avos and Perakei and Mishnah Yates goes through different examples how that might work. The Rav Moshe, in his introduction to the Igros Moshe, seems to take the approach of Rashi, that there is only one truth at a time, and he considers us, however, that if we have erred in trying to arrive at that truth and mistakenly chose the wrong approach to a specific commandment, we don't have to worry. That is, not only will not be held accountable for performing the mitzvah incorrectly, but we will receive reward for following our understanding that we arrived with honest work and an awe for the avoda that we did. And therefore, Moshe says it's possible in the right time and place, there is always one correct truth. The Drashos Haran has a different approach. He says that when Hashem gave the Torah to Moshe on Har Sinai, he gave the Torah Shebichsav, Halacha Moshe Misinai, and the Torah Shebaal Peh, and he gave the Midos Torah to Drashos Behem, as we've discussed at length, and he left it up to the Chacham in every generation to paskin to the way they read in between the lines. Accordingly, different perspectives on Halacha exist, and in every generation the Halacha is ruled in accordance with the understanding of that generation, even though this results in different applications in different generations. And this is generally the accepted understanding of Eilu Ve'eilu Devaril Kimchayim, that yes, within the Torah, there's all different things that may be true. Meaning in Shemayim, everything is correct. As opposed to Rashi's explanation, which is that in Shemayim, there is one right answer, but there's other things depending on the situation and the time. There are many, many more things to discuss Eilu Ve'eilu. Just this afternoon, I looked on YU Torah to see how many shirim there are in Eilu Ve'eilu. There's got to be 50, 60 shirim. Rav Shechter has tons of shirim. There's all different types of sources. So I and Sham go look over there to discuss the issues that related to Eilu Ve'eilu and how they play out. And Be'ezus Hashem, next time when we meet, we'll begin to discuss the period of the Tanayim and the formulation of the Gemara and the Gemara.